You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast,
featuring Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
Join them on their journey as they grow from gambling writers to sports betting sharps.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Now, Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Welcome back to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Man, do we have a heck of a show on deck for you. It's Monday, May 17th. Eston and I are going to be talking about the 2021 PGA Championship. And then we're going to break down the four games for the NBA play-in tournaments. Look ahead to the NBA playoff odds or playoff series matchup odds that have been posted thus far. Then we'll wrap up with a little bit of coverage and handicapping of the first round of the NHL playoffs before I bring in my handicap and hype man and gambling consigliere. Let me do a quick shout out to our sponsor and odds provider, our friends over at BetMGM. BetMGM has several brick and mortar locations throughout the United States, and they have a great user-friendly mobile app operational in 10 states. So all of our listeners in Colorado, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Iowa, Tennessee, Nevada, Michigan, and Virginia, visit BetMGM Sportsbook before making your next wager. All right, sports gamblers, let's talk some gambling. Bringing them in, the co-host, the sharper one of this podcast, my colleague and homie, the great Eston McLaren. Eston, what's up, brother?
And Jeff, thanks for that. Doing well. It's another major week in the PGA Tour, so super excited for that. And of course, you mentioned NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. Now, it's one of the best times of the sports season, and we were robbed of it last year, so it's nice to be back in a full swing and, you know, having all this action to talk about today.
I know, and it's a unique situation, much like the dead air or the block of missing games, missing playoffs series last year. This year, we have the new play-in tournaments, inaugural play-in tournaments for the NBA. And I feel like there's a specific 2020-2021 NHL Stanley Cup playoff like rules and organization that we can dive into when we're talking a little bit about the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. But let's start with the 2021 PGA Championship, which is at Ocean Course in Kiawah Island, South Carolina. I butcher these here or there. Did I say that one right?
That's correct, yeah. The Ocean Course, Pete Dye design, famed golf architect, he and his wife Alice. You know, this is a pretty unique course for the United States, at least, a much closer to resembling courses you see in the UK and Ireland. You know, runs entirely along the coast of the Atlantic Ocean off of South Carolina. Contrary to the name a little bit and to what I just said, water's really only in play on three holes, but you know, this course is beautiful. Wind is the major issue, and it sure seems like it's going to be this week, at least Thursday and Friday. Winds are going to be up, you know, double digits, up to 20 miles per hour. We are going to see high scores. I almost said may see high scores, but no, that's an absolute certainty. You know, this tournament was the last played at Kiawah Island. The last PGA Tour event at Kiawah Island was in 2012. Rory McIlroy won by 8 strokes at 13 under par. Nobody else shot better than -5. You know, I think guys would be happy to get into -5 after 72 holes this year. I'm very much looking forward to this tournament and this course.
Yeah, you said that it resembles a European course. Does that mean it's more hilly? Do I have that right?
The course is elevated up above the coastline. The idea behind the design was so that you could see the ocean from every hole on the course. With that comes these awful winds on every single hole of the course going, and obviously being on the ocean, those winds aren't going any one specific direction. They just swirl around on every single hole. Not super hilly. flat length style, but you know, the main hazards on this course, other than the winds, sand bunkers and dunes that guard all the greens, the fairways are super wide. This is the longest venue for a major championship ever. You know, guys can absolutely let it rip driver off the tee. They're not going to get much trouble there, but the trouble then comes with their second shot on every par four, every par five. Narrow landing areas and large narrow greens that are very firm and are going to kick you off into these bunkers and the dunes. And you know, everyone's going to look at the length, 7,849 yards, and think, hey, driving's the only thing that matters. But no, my main stats this week are strokes gained around the green, strokes gained approach. That's going to be way more important, you know, even or especially if the wind comes in and, you know, just everyone's at a loss off the tee.
All right. Well, are these things, the numbers and the angles that you're looking at, are these things that Rory McIlroy specializes in? Because he's the, I almost said overwhelming favorite, but he's a considerable favorite. He's plus 1,100 to win the tournament. The next bracket or the next tier of favorites, I guess, would be Jon Rahm, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Thomas, all at plus 1,400. Bryson DeChambeau is plus 1,600, along with Dustin Johnson. And the defending champion, Colin Morikawa, is plus 3,000. Why do you think Rory McIlroy is the favorite coming in?
So Rory's been the favorite, you know, basically ever since Morikawa won last year at TPC Harding Park. Rory's been, you know, first, second, third by the odds. That's because of that 8-stroke victory 10 years ago. You know, he crushed the field in horrible conditions. There's only one player who broke 70 in the second round in 2012. Could very much be the case again this year. So that course history is what kept Rory there. You know, during a poor stretch of play to start this year, missed cut at the Players, missed cut at the Masters, you know, just hasn't looked himself. He peaked at about plus 1,600. I was lucky enough to get that number. He then went out and won the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow Club, a course in a tournament he's won three times. So, you know, that thrust him back into this number one spot at plus 1,100 now, as you say. And you know, that's right. So he just dominated, or yeah, he only won by one, but it was closer to domination than that, I would say. That failed at a course where he's played well. Now he's back again at a course where he's played well. He's the rightful favorite here. And yes, he's very well suited to this course. I just mentioned that, you know, everyone can drive here and that's going to kind of level the field. But Rory's second on tour in driving distance. That's going to be huge. He's also 23rd in sand saves. That was a key part of his win at Quail Hollow. You know, a big part of his win, the Wells Fargo Championship. So yeah, the worse the weather gets, the more I like Rory's chances here. Long course, especially if we get some rain, which we're supposed to get Thursday. If that course plays wet and soft, it's going to make it seem even longer. And that's right up Rory's alley. And yeah, he's the rightful favorite here for sure.
All right. Who do you think is mispriced, or who should be the favorite if taking away Rory McIlroy?
Okay, yeah. So if you're taking away Rory and want the number one favorite, I would probably say DeChambeau. Everyone knows about his drivers, but you know, this guy's an excellent putter as well. He doesn't get nearly talked about enough. That's plus 1,600. The best value kind of in this top tier for me, Patrick Cantlay at plus 3,500. He's 12th in the official world golf ranking. And he's the only player on tour who averages at least 0.50 strokes gained around the green and off the tee. He's also 7th in bogey avoidance. So he does a great job at dodging high scores, which we're going to see a lot of this week. And yeah, short game and driving. I really like Patrick Cantlay at plus 3,500. That has him at, 18th by the odds, or 15th by the odds. That's great value for the 12th ranked player in the world.
What do you think about the chances of the defending Masters champion going back to back in majors, Matsuyama?
Matsuyama, yeah, we returned to play last week at the, what was that, AT&T Byron Nelson. You know, kind of a lackluster finish. Strange to see after he won the Masters, great putting. Putting stroke just fully abandoned him last week. He made a mess of it on the greens all four rounds, really. If that part of his game's gone, he's not going to be able to make up strokes that everyone's going to lose here. It's going to come down to who can best avoid trouble and then also save themselves with the putter. I don't like Matsuyama for that this week. He's a strong fade candidate for me, especially at plus 3,300. I think that's way too low of a number, largely due to the Masters win, obviously. And yeah, he's a great player, but I don't like him at this venue.
Gotcha. What are some of the players that do have the game that fit this venue?
Yeah, so other than Rory, Cantlay, DeChambeau, Justin Thomas, a very good approach game, great iron player, good off the tee as well, plus 1,400. That's fine value for me, and I don't want to bet it, but if you're a Justin Thomas fan, that's fine. This course does suit him well. Victor Hovland, another guy, plus 2,000. Of course, right up his alley. He can rip it off the tee when he doesn't need to worry about getting in trouble. His short game, not so strong. His putting's much better, but if he misses these greens on approach, which is rare generally, but will be more often here, I don't super love it. He's going to be a very popular pick, but probably a bit of a fade for me. Getting into some long shots here a little bit. Joaquin Niemann, plus 6,600. He's 29th in the official world golf ranking, but 9th in the Golf Week rankings we like to go by. But he's very middling in the odds here, plus 6,600. Great off the tee, great on approach. Putting comes and goes, but I like him here in tough conditions. Reigning Open Championship winner Shane Lowry, long reigning Open Championship winner, plus 9,000. He's 48th in the official world golf ranking, so you know, top 50 player. Should do well here. This course, to me, it's very comparable to Royal Port Rush, where he won in 2019. We know he can compete in strong fields. He did well at the Players' Championship, finished 8th. I like Shane Lowry here. And then, other than that, for me, I'm going to focus on short game with my long shot picks, especially. The strokes gained around the green, sand save percentage, just mentioned with Rory, that's going to be huge. Christian Bezuidenhout, South African, plus 15,000, 41st in the official world golf ranking. A couple wins on the European Tour, the South African Tour, the Sunshine Tour, excuse me. Short games, fantastic. Sand saves, excellent. And Dylan Fratelli, plus 25,000, a big long shot. We've seen long shots win the PGA Championship before. Sean McKeel rings a bell. Fratelli tied for 5th at the Masters in the fall. Didn't do so well in April under slightly tougher conditions. Slipped to 81st in the official world golf ranking, but we know he can compete in these fields. He's been doing it for a long time, and just a great short game and great sand player.
As someone who's just starting and just entertaining the idea of golf gambling, golf handicapping, what's a bit of a point of interest for me is like how someone who is an expert like yourself or has been doing it for a long time, how like they parse up their different bets, because the just the USPGA Championship golf betting menu and all the different markets listed within each golf tournament is a little overwhelming to someone who isn't very used to it, like myself. You got things like, you know, special bets where you can win or you can bet on which country or which section of the world has the winning golfer. You have the placement bets, top 5, top 10, round leaders, top players, and all different countries and parts of the world. So I guess like my first question is, how do you usually divvy up your golf tournament betting? Like how much do you put to outrights? How much do you put into these head-to-head markets? How are you looking at it?
So four majors that you have futures odds for a full year, I'll generally place all my outrights via that. For majors, the Masters, PGA Championship, US Open, British Open, I'll rarely place an outright bet the week of. for those tournaments, because I'll shop those lines all year and get the better values on guys who I think can play well at the upcoming course. So then when it comes to the week, that's when I like to focus mostly on the top player groups, top Great Britain and Ireland, top English. We're going to have top American later in the week. That's where I generally find the best value, because those are generally tamped down by one favorite. So if you want to fade them, you can always get a much better number at the second or third guy. So I like to look there. Special bets, as you mentioned, I don't make a habit of betting those. A lot of those are largely sucker bets at sucker prices. But I'll peruse those every tournament, obviously. And you know, if one stands out as a value, I'll do it. Here we have tournament specials: American winner -150, English winner +800, South African winner +2000. So a lot of the guys I've just named, English, South African, I'm going to fade Americans because this is more of a European, South African style course. I'm going to focus on those guys. You can place both of those bets and still come out well ahead with the winner. And then round one leader is the most volatile of any golf bet. Generally place a bet or two on those, one on a favorite who's getting a higher number, and then just swing for the fences with a long shot. So mentioned Rory McIlroy +1100 to win outright, and Dylan Fratelli +25,000 to win outright. You can get Rory at +2200 for the first round leader, and you can get Fratelli at +15,000 for first round leader. So the favorites, generally their odds rise when it drops down to 18 holes, and the long shots, their odds condense, as we see with Fratelli here. So yeah, it's the most volatile market. We have 156 players in the field this week, as we do most standard tournaments. It's pretty wide open. So I strongly advise against placing many first round leader bets. But then to specifically answer your question, if you want to talk percentages, I'd say throughout the year, I'll probably end up with 50% of my money in outright tickets, and then 50% I'll diversify among those groups and then some matchups.
Is there any markets that you started betting more of recently and less of recently? Like, are there things that jump out to you? Does it change between tournaments, or like, are you betting different markets for the Masters as opposed to the U.S. Open, British Open, and this PGA Championship?
I've been betting more matchups of late, especially with these bigger tournaments, the majors. You get the 72 hole matchups at least early Monday. We already have them. The first round three ball matchups, we're not going to get those probably until Wednesday morning, maybe late Tuesday. But yeah, I like to look for value in those, and they're fun to write up, especially the marquee ones. They're very heavily weighted by popularity. So for me, one I really like this week actually is Colin Morikawa, as you said, the reigning champion, against Daniel Berger. Morikawa is a -115 favorite. Berger's -105. Morikawa the favorite here because of him winning last year, but that's a completely different course. This venue suits Daniel Berger a whole lot better. -105 is a great value for him. I also like Rory over Justin Thomas. Rory's -115 favorite. Again, I think the course is just much better for him. Thomas won the Players' Championship, hasn't really shown a whole lot since then. I'm going to fade him here. And then Victor Hovland over Jordan Spieth, -105 underdog in that matchup. You know, everyone loves Spieth. Spieth, every tournament since he's come back this year, he's been among the highest bet golfers by both handle and ticket percentage. Yeah, he's pretty close to being back to where he was. But even then, this venue doesn't really suit him well. He did win an Open Championship during his peak, but this is a bit different from even that course, being along the ocean. These winds, he he's still struggling off the tee. I mentioned he doesn't need to be overly accurate here, but his inaccurate is different than most people's inaccurate, and the wind could really take him for a ride. And as we talked about with our Masters show and any other time we talk about Jordan Spieth, you know, he plays on the edge, and that's what makes him so much more popular than most other golfers. But that at this venue where winds are going to inflate scores, his attitude, his temperament could take him out of this pretty early.
All right. You said you were interested in taking, or you have an outright on Patrick Cantlay, and you weren't, based on your response to my question on whether or not Hideki Matsuyama would be able to go back-to-back after winning the Masters. Do you see any value in their head-to-head, which is priced at minus 110 each way?
Yeah, absolutely. I would take Cantlay there, and that's because I like Cantlay, and yeah, I'm fading Matsuyama. You know, it's so rare for guys to go back-to-back and win two different majors, because they're two different tournaments at two different locations. So it's like we rarely see it regularly in the PGA Tour. Sam Burns just tried to give it a run here this past week at the Byron Nelson. But even that was with a week off in between tournaments. Matsuyama, he took a long time off after the Masters win, returned last week. Didn't do enough to impress me. I don't think this course plays so much more differently than the Masters. I don't like him here at a longer, arguably more difficult course. So yeah, give me Patrick Cantlay for sure.
All right, cool. That's the one that I was interested in betting after I heard your feedback regarding Matsuyama and Cantlay. And I'm sure you'll be revisiting the 2021 PGA Championship in our Going to the Window segment. Also, you're going to have a whole bunch of stuff being published to sportsbookwire.com this week, I'm assuming, right? Head-to-head matchups, top player groups, all the other stuff. How many assignments or posts do you think are going to be publishing?
Yeah, quite a few. So as we're recording this Monday, so far up there, I have a tournament betting guide and my outright picks. Later today, I'm going to have my top 20 fantasy rankings. From there, it's going to be long shots. So I'm going to do a specific piece on how to bet McIlroy, all the different options for him, because he's going to be the most talked about player this week. And then I'm going to do one of my favorite pieces for these majors is one bet for each of the favorites, the top 10 guys by the odds, their best prop bet or outright, whatever that may be. And then, yes, Wednesday morning will be separate pieces for matchups and these group top player props. So, yeah, I guess that takes us to a total of 7 or 8 pieces, and looking forward to it. It's a golf major, and like I said before, my favorite time of the year.
Awesome. Yeah, and Essen will, I'm sure, be bringing some of his picks to the window with him before we get out of here. But if you're looking for some more PGA Championship coverage, takes, handicaps, be sure to check out Essen's stuff on sportsbookwire.usatoday.com. But let's change gears here. Go to the NBA, where the play-in tournaments tip off tomorrow. The Eastern Conference teams are doing battle, and the Western Conference teams start Thursday. The rules, for those of you who don't know, it's a little complicated, or can be complicated if you just hear the generals. But once I break it down for you, it'll be easy to understand. The 7 and 8 seed in each conference play a game, and whoever wins clinches the 7th seed and doesn't have to play again until their first round playoff series against the 2 seed in the East. The winner of the 7 and 8 matchup between the Boston Celtics, or the 7th seed, and 8th seed Washington Wizards will be playing the 2 seed Brooklyn Nets. And that game tips off. That's the second NBA game, or NBA Eastern Conference playing game. That's Wednesday. Hold on, pulling it up right now. Would be 9:10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The first game is between the 9 and 10 seeds. Now, the 9 and 10 seed in each conference, the winner of that gets to play the loser of the 7 and 8 seed, and the winner of that game locks in as the 8th seed. The 8th seed will be playing the Philadelphia 76ers in the East, and in the West, they'll be playing the Utah Jazz. So just to recap, or to kind of tighten that all up a little bit. In each conference, the 7 and 8 seed play. The winner clinches a playoff berth, and then the loser plays the winner of the 9 and 10 seed games. The winner of that matchup clinches the 8 seed. And again, the first game on hand here or on deck is 6:40 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday, May 18th, and it's the Charlotte Hornets, the 10 seed, versus the 9 seed Indiana Pacers. Both teams ended on a skid. Charlotte really kind of backed into the playoffs due to a lot of injuries to their backcourt, but Indiana also had some major injuries to their backcourt as well. Gordon Hayward is probably going to miss this game. He's projected for a late May recovery or availability, which is only possible if the Hornets were to beat the Indiana Pacers and advance at least one more game. Do you have any feelings one way or the other towards this game?
Yeah, I'm on the Hornets here, +3 and maybe even a +125 money line. Yeah, Hayward's out, but the rest of the team, you know, seems to be back healthy and going to play at least this game. You know, Pacers have more injuries right now, maybe none as important as Hayward, but it's not good for Indiana. I don't understand how they seem to be removed from that in this pricing. Charlotte won 2 of the 3 meetings in the regular season. Since April 1, Indiana, the better net rating, Charlotte's better rebounding team. I think it's just too good a value on the Hornets against the Pacers team that, to me, is just getting far too much respect.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. They're actually much better coach as well. This whole Indiana Pacers new coach, Nate Borchgren, I can't pronounce his name, Nate B., has been a real disaster this year. Hopefully he turns it around next year, but there was damn near a mutiny on the team. We saw how well Nate McMillan's doing with the Atlanta Hawks. Pretty sure when they fired their coach this year and turned the reins over to Nate McMillan, they were sub .500. And they ended up making it to the Eastern Conference playoffs as the 5 seed. So at least through the first year, they definitely downgraded in coaching. Malcolm Brogdon is questionable to play. Aaron Holiday is questionable to play. Jeremy Lamb won't be playing. Miles Turner won't be playing. Edmund Sumner might not be playing. So what is an important or what is Charlotte's advantage is their backcourt. Wouldn't have been much of an advantage if it weren't for all these Indiana Pacers injuries. They're going to need a big game actually out of TJ McConnell if a few of these guys are going to miss, especially against Malik Monk coming off the bench. But Terry Rozier has hit clutch shots for Charlotte all season long. Charlotte had the highest clutch net advanced rating or advanced net rating and for clutch situations for most of the year. I'm pretty sure they ended atop the NBA. The only team that could have jumped them would have been the Portland Trailblazers. And I have concerns with the Pacers' continuity and their lack of a point guard, especially if Brogdon can't play. I love Caris LeVert, but sometimes he turns too much into an ISO player. And, you know, the best player on the floor is going to be Domantas Sabonis. So if they could play through him, which sometimes Caris LeVert gets lost in his own bag, so to speak, they might forget to get Domantas Sabonis the touches he needs. But Indiana's last in defensive rebounding rate, their last in second chance points allowed, and their last in opponent's paint points allowed, while Charlotte is 8th in offensive rebounding rate. You know, it's they like to attack the glass, and this coach James Borrega does a pretty good job of attacking weak spots on teams. They jumped out to an early double-digit lead in their regular season finale against the Washington Wizards before the Wizards were able just to like kind of like out-talent them and figure it out and push past them. But I'm definitely liking the points here if I were to play it either way. It's more of a lean than anything, but I would definitely take the Hornets +3 because they're better coach. That's the gist of it. And yeah, the rebounding, like you said, it's really bad for Indiana. And it's like, in my opinion, it's surprisingly bad because Domantas Sabonis is a great all-around basketball player, puts up huge numbers, but they have very, very little interior presence. It's having that soft of an interior going against a coach and a team that has great continuity. They move the ball well. They're very unselfish. I'd rather take the points than Lamb, that's for sure. All right, let's go on to the next game, unless you have any other. Oh, go ahead.
Well, just quickly, the thing about the Pacers, you know, mini run last year in the playoffs, like, their biggest asset was their depth, right? Like, you get rid of Victor Oladipo, TJ Warren goes down an injury for the year, and you have all these other injuries you just mentioned. You know, depth isn't an asset anymore at all. And yeah, Domantas Sabonis should be the best player in this game whenever he's on the floor, but behind him, there isn't really a whole lot of help on the roster, and especially not in the areas where they need it against this Hornets team. I am shocked at this line, actually.
I mean, yeah, Charlotte has just limped down the stretch. Their last, hold on, let me pull it up. Their last, well, they're on a 5-game losing streak coming into the, coming into the playoffs or in the play-in game. But their losses weren't that bad. I mean, they got blown out by the Clippers, but they kept it within 5 with Denver the game before that. They lost in overtime, but didn't get the cover against the New York Knicks, but it was in Madison Square Garden. Obviously, New York had a lot to play for. And they lost at 5, and they had a double-digit lead at the Washington Wizards to end the season. But it's just, I think there's a lot of recency bias here. And you made an excellent point that I had in my notes and forgot to talk about, but the biggest reason for their bubble performance last year and making it to the playoffs as, I believe, a 5 seed, they could have been the 4 seed technically, was TJ Warren. If you remember, TJ Warren, pretty sure he set a career high for points in one of the bubble games and was just going absolutely nuts. You know, he's hardly played this season. They got rid of Victor Oladipo, which, you know, wasn't a fit, but they put their eggs in the Victor Oladipo basket and it didn't work out for them. You know, they have dealt with injuries. I think next year, Malcolm Brogdon, a full year with Caris LeVert, hopefully TJ Warren's back. That's a team I'm going to be interested in seeing, you know, betting on early in the season or seeing how they do against the spread early in the season. But no, you make a good point. You know, they did have a lot of depth and TJ Warren not being there specifically hurts them. On to the next game, which does tip off again tomorrow at 9:10 Eastern Standard Time. So Washington Wizards, they're getting 1.5 to the 10 seed, or excuse me, the 8 seed. They're playing the 7 seed, Boston Celtics, -1.5, 110 each way. The over-under is 232.5. The money line's Wizards +105, Celtics -125. I'm just going to spoil this now ahead of time. I'm going to go ahead and take this the window with me. And I'm betting the Wizards. I've been betting the Wizards a lot down the stretch here. I was high on them coming into the season. I thought they would be a top 8 seed in the Eastern Conference. And it was clunky how they got there, but they ended up proving me right. They dealt with a myriad of COVID and injury issues. Obviously, there was a slow ramp-up time for Russell Westbrook and the Bradley Beal matrimony to come together, but they're playing really well. I like how they close out the game against the Charlotte Hornets the other night with Russell Westbrook doing a lot of deferring down the stretch to Bradley Beal and Ish Smith. I'm high on Rui Hachimura. I have not a whole bunch, but I have more to say here on the Boston Celtics, but I definitely like the Wizards outright in this game. I wouldn't take the 1.5. I really don't start taking points until it gets to 2.5. I have taken +1.5, though, and gotten covered a spread, but the team that I bet on lost the game. So that has happened before, but I'm just going to take the +105 at the money line here at the Wizards. Where are you leaning, or who do you like in this matchup?
I'm right with you. And no, I wasn't as high on the Wizards at the start of the season as you were, but yeah, they've absolutely played their way into me taking them. And, you know, the Celtics team has absolutely played their way out of me, and I'd recommend anyone taking them. Like, this team all season has seemed to be like, oh, look out for the Celtics. As they keep losing games, the value keeps rising, and once they turn it on, they'll be scary. Well, it hasn't been scary. And this Wizards team, every game has mattered for them this year. They went 6-4 over the final 10 games of the season. The Celtics went 1-5 in their final six. So they continued to just coast into this seventh seed in the play-in tournament. I don't know why that was. I don't know what was so scary about just winning the sixth seed for them. Yeah, it's absolutely the Wizards for me. They're used to fighting for their lives. And yeah, I also think they're just a better team than the Celtics right now. And whoa, Boston, big trouble. But yeah, no, with you on Washington plus 105 is fine for me. I'm going to parlay that with Charlotte at plus 125. I feel good about it. Two underdogs.
What's the payout? It's got to be close to 3-1, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I'll let you know when I catch the ticket.
What's even more alarming for Celtics fans is they didn't even really coast into the playoffs as much as they limped in and across the finish line. Jaylen Brown is out for the season, their second leading scorer, and arguably as important as Jason Tatum. The reason why I really like the Wizards in this matchup isn't just recency bias and current form, but Boston's interior defense has been and is soft. They're 25th in defensive mid-range field goal percentage, 24th in defensive field goal percentage at the rim. If we know anything about Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal, Westbrook likes to attack the rim at will, and if they're going to provide very little resistance, which a front court with Jason Tatum and Tristan Thompson will do, or I guess won't provide resistance, it's going to be easy for Russell Westbrook to get a whole bunch of buckets. And Bradley Beal loves to operate in the mid-range. He's got a lot in his bag, a lot of different ways that he could score, whether it be driving to the hoop, but there's a lot of times where he'll pull up in the mid-range. And a guy I'm high on, Rui Hachimura, is another guy who's really looked good offensively in the second season. He's also got a nice mid-range pull-up jump shot that I like, and this is just an area of weakness for the Boston Celtics defense. There's really no area of strength of the Boston Celtics defense. Kemba Walker, they're going to be able to exploit that matchup the whole night, whether it be with Russell Westbrook or Bradley Beal, whoever he gets ISO'd on. Yeah, I mean, it's just going to have to be, for the Celtics to win, it's not even hard to figure out their path to victory. It's as simple as Jason Tatum going off. And if you can hold Jason Tatum to taking 25 to 30 contested 20-footers, then you should be able to win that game, or you should put yourself in a pretty good position to win that game. Also, the Wizards covered both meetings with Boston this season, or covered two of the meetings with Boston this season, four of the past five. The Wizards are 12-6 against the spread on the road versus winning teams, and they have quality road wins over Brooklyn, the Lakers, fully healthy Heat team, the Denver Nuggets, Utah Jazz. So they're used to playing against good teams, which Boston isn't even a good team at this point. Washington, again, the key is going to be being able to tear up that Boston weak interior defense. Washington does score the fifth most paint points per game. So I like Washington going to the window with it. I'm going to take him on the money line. Do you have any other thoughts before we head to the West?
No, that's good for me in the East.
All right. The first matchup in the Western Conference play-in games is going to be the 10-seed San Antonio Spurs playing the 9-seed Memphis Grizzlies, which will be Wednesday. The tip-off of that game is 7:40 Eastern Standard Time. Excuse me. The Memphis Grizzlies favored 3.5, minus 110 on both sides. The over-unders 221.5 with the over juiced to minus 115. The unders minus 105. The money line situations plus 135 for the Spurs, minus 160 for the Grizzlies. Who do you think is going to win this game or cover?
Yeah, so two underdogs in the Eastern Conference. It's all favorites for me in the West here. Grizzlies minus 165 or minus 3.5. Yeah, Grizzlies won two of the three meetings in the regular season. Both of those are by 17 plus points. I think they're just a hungrier team and a better team. Just the 9 seed versus the 10, obviously, but yeah, 3.5 is a small enough number for me. I just see them as being more hungry here against the Spurs team that hasn't really cared all year and is now also dealing with more injury issues.
Oh man, are we gonna line up on every side of this? That can't be good. Hopefully we go 4-0.
I'm not sure it's ever happened before, so.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, well, usually we're talking about full like NFL weekly slates, and if we went on the same side of 14, 15 games, that would be weird. That would be really terrible podcasting as well. Oh yes. Man, I feel like I have to argue just to argue, but I can't. I can't. Grizzlies house them in two of the three meetings. They won. The two that they won was without their best player. I think of their best player, Jonas Valanciunas. He's been just absolutely going nuts down the stretch here, putting up 20 and 15 multiple times here in the final few games of the season. Spurs just don't have any shooting to stretch a Memphis half-court defense. They're 24th. The Spurs are in three-point percentage, and they shoot the least amount of three-pointers in the league. And, you know, having, I guess, more versatility in their game in terms of like attacking the basket, operating in the mid-range, and shooting from a distance would help take advantage of an aggressive Grizzlies defense that sometimes will gamble or try to jump into passing lanes and get itself out of position. But, you know, the Spurs just don't move fast enough, and they don't shoot enough threes to kind of to take advantage of that. They're a bad rebounding team. The Grizzlies are a really good rebounding team. Memphis scores the second most paint points per game, and they have the second the most second chance points per game as well. Also, San Antonio's 20th or worse in both those. I just feel like John Morant is going to be attacking the glass, attacking the basket. And Jonas Valanciunas is just going to eat up the interior. And unless DeMar DeRozan completely takes over this game, which he's capable of doing, I'm a huge fan of his game, but the Memphis Grizzlies interior defense is pretty good. I think they're going to make it more difficult on DeMar DeRozan for getting in his spots. And they don't have a terrible defensive free throw rate, the Memphis Grizzlies. It is below average. But I think they'll be all right against DeMar DeRozan and the Spurs, because outside of him, they don't really have anyone that could create their own look. I do lean to the under as well, even though Memphis has just really put it on them in the last two meetings. But I would lay it with the -3.5. You know, I think the best idea that I could have about how I'd play the Wednesday games would probably be a parlay, actually. If I parlayed the Grizzlies -160 with the Lakers at -190, those money lines on BetMGM, it would be +148 the odds. I feel like I'd rather do that than fuss at the points, because as well coached as the Spurs obviously are with Greg Popovich and how little experience Memphis Grizzlies have in must-win games, I wouldn't hate just getting rid of that 3.5-point 3.5-point line. Also, the same can't be said about the Lakers, but the Warriors have a little bit more experience, and I'm just completely tripping about what Steph Curry could do in that game. Do you have any other thoughts about the Spurs and Grizzlies before we go to the Warriors-Lakers?
No, that's good. Grizzlies hungrier to me is the biggest thing. I'm more willing to take the -3.5 than you, but I like your parlay strategy for sure.
And the final play-in game here, the Golden State Warriors, which are the 8 seed, play the 7 seed Los Angeles Lakers. The winner clinches a playoff berth and a meeting with the Phoenix Suns in the first round. Then the loser will play the winner of the San Antonio-Memphis game to see who plays the Utah Jazz in the first round. But the Lakers are favored 4.5 with their 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time meeting with the Warriors at Staples Center. It's in LA. Warriors are getting 4.5. It's -110 each way. The over-under is 219.5, -110 each way. Like I said, the money line for the Lakers is -190 and the Warriors +155. I'm on the Lakers -4.5. I don't know if I'm going to take it to the window. I think I'm just going to stick with the Wizards money line on that one. But I am going to get some money down here on the Lakers, whether it be that parlay idea that I just shared with you or just the -4.5. Let me give you a theory that I have real quick. So this line opened at 6.5 and it's been bet down to 4.5. It's gone down 2 points 2 days. Wait, 2 days ahead of tip off. My thought is the sharps, the syndicates, the players with big money in the market in the space are moving this line down to a better number for the Lakers. And they're hoping, similar to the momentum that we saw with the end, the final regular season game between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat, they're getting to the point where people are going to start jumping on the Warriors, and the public money is going to start betting the Warriors as well, getting them down to like 3.5, 3 before a lot of late Lakers money comes in. Either way, I think a lot of late Lakers money is coming in, and this early line movement is more or less sharps and syndicates trying to get the Lakers down to a better number. What are your thoughts on that theory?
So in that theory, the sharps are betting the Warriors now, and then they're going to bet heavier on the Lakers at a better number?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, wow. That's,
I don't know.
Deep, little conspiracy theory maybe, but yeah.
Well, if you think of like the NFL slate, the casino, the sports books open up the betting as soon as the Sunday games end, right? As soon as they launch the lines, they'll theoretically open up the betting, but it's reduced limits, right? They want the market to be set, see where the money's coming in, and then once they start having liability one way or the other, or just as it gets closer to Sunday game day, they'll start opening up the limits and expanding the limits. I don't know. I'm kind of talking out of my ass here. I don't know if it's that's how it's working with these playing games, right? I don't know specifically like the sports books rules on it, but I would assume they'll be taking bigger bets closer to tip off and smaller bets now. So it's almost like the syndicates are just hitting it. Right now, I'll get the Warriors +6.5. I'll keep betting it. And then there's some public money that'll be like, oh my God, the sharps, they like the Warriors too. Steph Curry is on fire. It's a one game play-in. They can't beat them by 5. And now it's turned into 4.5. And it might turn into 4. And they'll keep telling themselves that. And eventually, like, you'll get 100K bets on Wednesday morning, right? That's kind of what I see. Maybe I'm talking out of my ass, but this somewhat makes sense, right, as you're hearing it?
Yeah, it does make sense. That's just the difference between me and the sharps, I guess, is they have the 50K to kiss goodbye to in hopes of betting 100K a few days later and making back that money. But yeah, no, the theory sound, I can believe the logic at least.
I mean, what's the pro Warriors case? Because they have no offense outside of Steph Curry. So it's common sense. Yeah. Steph Curry goes for 50. Oh, okay. I mean, they're playing the best defensive team in the league, the best defensive backcourt in the league, the defending champions. So, yeah, if Steph Curry goes for 60, sure. But that's every game he'll ever play in.
Right. But even then, who's getting the other 50 or 60, right? Like, yeah, the Lakers are healthy now. Like, forget everything you've seen from the Lakers these last couple weeks or months. This is what matters to them. They're the defending champions. I'm going to get into it in a minute with Tampa Bay Lightning. We've seen the same thing in hockey, really, where defending champion, you know, did only what it had to do in the regular season. Has a full, healthy roster now. I don't see how the road to the championship doesn't go through the Lakers, at least in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I just feel like there was a lot of just money on the recency bias and the Curry momentum and the anti-Laker recency bias because they're so banged up. And, you know, we haven't seen the Lakers play together since, shit, before Valentine's Day? I mean, when's the last time all of their roster was healthy enough? They've gotten one game with LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Andre Drummond, I believe, all on the floor together. So, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, I would interpret it as anti-Lakers money, but we'll see, I guess. And, yeah, Golden State Warriors, there are things to like about their defense, like their wing defenders. Oubre is injured, but Wiggins is a pretty good wing defender. Obviously, Draymond Green's one of the best in the league. But they do have the second highest defensive free throw rate. And the Lakers have the sixth highest offensive free throw rate. You know, if it's a one game must win, I could see LeBron playing bully ball and just getting a whole bunch of easy points at the charity stripe. And again, it's right, like, it is kind of common sense defending the Warriors. You could either allow Steph Curry to go nuts and just completely take everyone else out, or you could make it really tough on Steph Curry and like, hey, Wiggins, if you can get to 40, you beat us. That's fine. You know? Yeah.
And, you know, Wiggins, I don't care about the defensive stats from the season. He isn't going one-on-one against LeBron in crunch time. Yeah, as you say, LeBron's just going to bully him. Yeah, whatever theory you want to use, line movement in this is strange. It's all Lakers for me, minus 4.5. I feel more confident in this spread than I do in Grizzlies, minus 3.5.
All right, and real quick, because I just saw this as we started recording, the Westgate Superbook in Las Vegas announced first-round series prices for each conference's 3-versus-6 and 4-versus-5 matchups. So let's go through those really quick and just get our knee-jerk first reaction to these prices. Again, this is according to Westgate Superbook at Golf Odds. Jeff Sherman, he's the risk manager over there at Westgate Superbook. And they have the Heat. This is the first round 3-6 matchup in the East. Bucks, the 3 seed, are minus 330. The Heat are plus 270 to win the first round matchup. It's a rematch of their first round series last year. Actually, the biggest NBA cash that I had all of last year, if you remember, is I took the Heat to beat the Bucks in the first round, and that series price was plus 200 I got it at. So I was pretty excited about that one, if you remember last year, picking the Heat. I rode the Heat a lot in the bubble, but definitely not going to take a stab at them this year. I think the Bucks are in revenge mode. I wouldn't take the minus 330, but for series and stuff like that, not non-single games, I'm more willing to lay a big price. Just that's a little out of my price range, given how much I respect the Heat culture and Jimmy Butler shit. Any instant reactions to that price? The Bucks minus 330, Heat plus 270 first round?
No, I'm not going to bet it. I don't have the bankroll to back the Bucks there, but Bucks would be my pick. Yeah, I haven't seen, well, we haven't seen anything from the Heat really even reminiscent of last year. I don't know if part of that is, you know, all the young players who broke out in last year's playoffs, the rest of the league now being aware of those guys and being able to defend them better. But yeah, I don't have any confidence in the Heat to beat the Bucks this year.
Yeah, the only pro Heat money that I might throw down is I might try to bet like Kendrick Nunn 3-point props or player props, because what the Bucks do defensively, and it didn't work out for them in the early part of the season. They started to kind of progress back to their last season's form, still not as staunch of a defense as last year, but they do this thing where they allow teams to shoot a lot of threes. They just want the weaker three-point shooters to be firing. And I would assume that they assess that to be Trevor Ariza and Kendrick Nunn. You know, they don't want Duncan Robinson firing threes. They don't want Goran Dragic firing threes, Tyler Hero. So I might look to get on some Kendrick Nunn or Trevor Ariza props early, but definitely not as high in the Heat this year as I was last year. The other first-round series that we have prices for is the Hawks minus 140. They're the 5 seed against the Knicks at plus 120. I love the Knicks here. I'm a little biased because I am a Knicks fan, but they have the better coach. They have the best player in the series, the better defense. They've been playing better down the stretch, and they've won the season series against the Atlanta Hawks. I think this is, outside of, you know, Boston or the Wizards, this is the best first round matchup for the Knicks. They would much rather play the Atlanta Hawks than the Miami Heat. And we haven't seen it with Trae Young. We don't know if the playoff officiating will be consistent in previous years where they give a lot less calls to the stars and allow teams to play more physical. Because if they do, the Knicks really have the Hawks number in this one, I think. And they're going to get a decisive Game 7 if it gets down to that point in Madison Square Garden, which is still going to have one of the better home court advantages, even with the reduced occupancy. So I'm definitely taking the Knicks at plus 120 at some point. What are your thoughts on that series?
I want to take the Hawks, but yeah, Julius Randle's going to be the biggest mismatch in that game. Mitchell Robinson, is he playing or no? No?
No.
Yeah, so.
That's cool. That, you know, I am nervous about Clint Capella because he has the highest rebounding rate in the league, and he is an absolute monster. Clint Capella is an absolute monster. I'm not arguing that. But Nerlens Noel is as good of a rim protector as anyone in the league. He's a little lighter than Mitchell Robinson. But Mitchell Robinson gets so many stupid fouls, which is the worst thing you could do against the Atlanta Hawks. It's the absolute worst thing you can do. Like, honestly, yes, I said enough. It's the worst thing. So I would obviously like him for the future round or the second round if we're gonna make it that far, but I'm okay with Nerlens Noel being the starting center. Want to go to the West real quick? And then we're gonna talk about the NHL. I mean, we'll be fast about this. Mavericks +425. They are the six seed, right? And they're playing they're the 5 seed and they're playing the 4 seed Clippers, who are the -550. Not a playable line for me either way. I mean, because of how tight the Mavericks kept it with the Clippers last year, I would say +425 would be the best. I wonder if BetMGM is going to have like series prices by games won, in the sense that like, can you bet Mavericks +1.5 games?
I don't know about that. I know usually, at least, you can get like the exact series score, so like 3-2, whatever. But I don't know if you can do a spread on the series line.
Interesting. Well, that'd be the one way I look about going, look to go about it. But we'll see what BetMGM has available, and also, you know, shop around, not just at BetMGM, our wonderful odds provider and sponsor, but you know, there are other lines and other markets on sites and other casinos that are worth checking out. We're not going to dive further into them though. And then the 3 versus 6 seed in the West, Nuggets -110 versus Trailblazers -110. It's a toss up for a good reason. Nuggets backcourt is pretty depleted with no Jamal Murray. Will Barton has been injured. So that's obviously not where you want to deal with injuries when you're playing against the Trailblazers with CJ McCollum and Dame Time and Norman Powell, who they added around the NBA trade deadline. I don't have any strong thoughts about this series one way or the other. I'm definitely going to be betting games as they happen, but I don't know. I mean, like, the Nuggets have the best player on the floor, which is kind of a... He's going to win MVP, so it's not controversial, but like in a 7-game series, Dame Time, so lethal. He has so many great moments. You know, it is more of like the pricing makes sense, the -110 each way.
Yeah, based on the Nuggets injuries, this is probably the worst matchup they could ask for. And yeah, I think that's going to bite them. I would have to take the Trailblazers here, I think, especially with the addition of Norman Powell to make that a three-headed monster for Portland in the backcourt. Yeah, I think they just let Jokic do his thing and then use those other three guys to just outscore them at the other end.
All right, on. Well, that was our NBA play-in coverage with a little bit of NBA first-round series price look ahead. Be sure to check out all of our NBA content. We'll be posting stuff for every game throughout the playoffs on sportsbookwire.usatoday.com. But before we get out of here, we got to talk about the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs.
It got underway this past weekend, and our resident hockey expert, Heston, here has some picks for this week's game. One of the questions that I have for you before, you know, we get going, or as we get going here on the Stanley Cup playoff coverage conversation, is there like a unique way to assess the Stanley Cup playoffs based on, you know, how it's set up? And what I mean by that is the playoff structure. Does that open the door for a team who otherwise wouldn't be much of a contender to be a contender?
Yeah, it's going to get weird. So the first two rounds, well, after the regular season, the top four seeds in each of the four divisions advance to the playoffs. The first two rounds are solely divisional play. So it's 1-4, 2-3, and then winners play. And then from there, once it's down to one division champion, I guess, so down to four teams, one winner in the division, they then go into a reseeding based on regular season standings for the Stanley Cup semifinal, and then winners go on to the cup final. So yeah, the futures odds right now and the BetMGM here, all their extra markets kind of have to reach the Stanley Cup finals, division of winning team, that sort of thing. Those are a crapshoot because, you know, if we have four seeds advance, as unlikely as that is, and, you know, I don't have the math worked out here on what that would look like for the third round matchups. That's, yeah, it's going to be nuts. And it makes it really tough to bet these extra futures markets right now. You almost have to go game by game or series by series right now. And yeah, we also have the added thing of, as these playoffs are underway, with Boston, Washington playing game two right now, the Calgary Flames and Vancouver Canucks are still playing meaningless regular season games in the North Division because of COVID-19 complications earlier in the year for Vancouver primarily. So yeah, you just kind of got to ignore that nonsense. Don't know why they have players risking injury with these games having zero impact at ever whatsoever. It's for draft lottery positioning, I guess, but ugly hockey up in Canada. And yeah, as I say, Boston, Washington game two, Monday night, Nashville, Carolina get started, St. Louis, Colorado. And then, yeah, full swing here. So we have three meaningful games just about every day now.
All right. Is any one of these matchups jumping out to you that you're willing to like stake your name or money on in the next following days that we have odds listed for?
Yeah, so Monday night, and not that that really matters quickly here. I love Nashville +145 against Carolina, and on the series line, I love Nashville as well. They are +190 on the series line. Carolina dominated them in the regular season series, but Nashville won the final two meetings quite handily, and that was a very different Predators team. You know, goalie UC Saros was incredible. The offense finally started to kick into gear. So I like Nashville on the series line and on the game one line. Going ahead to tomorrow then for better value or for more timeliness, I like the Tampa Bay Lightning -120 against the Florida Panthers. They took game one in a very exciting game, close game, one goal win. But that was the first game back all season for Nikita Kucherov, first game for Steven Stamkos in quite a while, and even the first game for Victor Hedman in a while. And they still got the job done. I think Tampa Bay is just going to get better and better as these playoffs go along. I want to bet them every single time they're more profitable than -150 on the money line. And I am absolutely hammering Tampa Bay +750 to win the Stanley Cup. Reigning champs, back-to-back, and I don't want to hear a counter argument because I'm not buying it. No, they're the best team in hockey.
What's the last back-to-back winner? Was the Penguins?
Yes. Great question. I don't have an answer for you right now, but yeah, it's been a while, but you know, these COVID times definitely change it up, right? So shorter season last year and their best player had a 56 game rest advantage on the rest of the league this year. So I'm fine with that.
What was he wasn't resting though. He was injured, right? He He wasn't just like chilling. Well, yeah. What did he have? I hear you. What injury is he battling? And do you think like he's going to be 100% coming back?
It was a hip injury, and yeah, he sure looked great in game one. He scored twice. Nikita Kucherov's the best player in the Lightning, the best player in this series, and could very well be the best player in these playoffs once he has a few more games under his belt. And yeah, we mentioned he was out with injury. You know, really, he was, or the theory, I guess, I don't want to stake my name on this. The theory is that he was resting for a lot longer and he was just left out of the lineup due to salary cap purposes. They kept him on long-term injury reserve longer than they may have needed to if they needed to win games more than they already were. So, yeah, I think Nikita Kucherov fully recovered from this hip injury. He sure looked great in game one and makes Tampa Bay the team to beat. And yes, Pittsburgh was the last team to go back-to-back as Stanley Cup champions in 2016 and 2017.
All right. I'm interested in this Predators plus 145 tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes. The Predators won the Central Division back-to-back seasons 2017 through 2019. And for whatever reason, that's like stuck in my head as like Nashville Predators and like this core, this like era of team being not too far removed from being a title contender. Again, this is just like me reading headlines and remembering fragments of headlines and highlights from years ago. But I don't know, like I instantly, when you said Nashville getting plus 145, I was interested. Raise my gambling Spidey senses.
Yeah, so big part of that was they handed the reins in net to UC Saros this year. He had been the longtime backup. He officially took over from Pecorine this year. He got off to a slow start. He then missed just under a month due to injury in the middle of the season, came back from that, and was one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, if not the best. Yeah, the defense isn't as good as that Nashville team you're remembering, but the forwards, kind of along the same time that Saros came back and started playing well, the forwards kind of kicked into gear as well, something that they had not done in the first half of the season. And yeah, I think they're absolutely a dark horse here. I really like this Nashville Predators team, and that's not to take anything away from Carolina. Carolina, a pretty similar team, actually, a bit younger, but led by Sebastian Aho up front. Goaltender Alex Nedeljkovic was the hero this year. Split time with Peter Mrazek and James Reimer. Mrazek expected to be the guy if he's healthy now, but Nedeljkovic, to me, deserves to get these playoff starts. But inexperienced, Saros got a little bit of experience last year. Just too lopsided. This is a 1-4 matchup in the Central, but I think these two teams are much more evenly matched. And as I said, Nashville dominated the final two regular season meetings of the year. So I like them on the game line and on the series line.
All right, Esten. Well, we, mostly you, have done a lot of good work this episode. We've covered a lot of bases. Let's wrap up this show by going to the window with our best bets.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. Going to the window.
All right. I know all of you are familiar, but going to the window is our segment where we just lock in our best bets from this episode. I have a pretty light bet slip on my end. I'm just going to stick to what I know, which is NBA basketball. And I'm going to take the Wizards at plus 105 on the money line. Not going to fuss with the points. This is going to be time coded, so go back and re-listen to what I said, but the recap is essentially Boston's interior defense is too soft for an attacking Russell Westbrook and a Bradley Beal who's second in the NBA in scoring and likes to operate in the mid-range. It is a little bit of recency bias. However, the recency of the Wizards has been wonderful. They've been playing great against good teams and have been playing their best basketball down the stretch while Boston lost their second leading scorer, Jaylen Brown, for the year. Been banged up the whole season, and it's been a year to forget for the Celtics. So I'm going to play the momentum and fade the struggling Celtics as well, taking the Wizards plus 105. That's it for me on my bet slip. What do you got going on, Esten? You did a whole bunch of handicapping this episode.
Wow, short one. Yeah, well, you led the way with NBA and strong takes, and already agreed with you once on those, so don't need to add any more here. Number one for me, Tampa Bay Lightning, +750 for the Stanley Cup. At quickly, that's only going to drop as Kucherov returns to form, if he isn't already, and as long as they keep winning more games. So I like the Lightning. Stanley Cup, 750. And then for the PGA Championship, I already bet Rory McIlroy. I got it at +1600. Personally, I'm not betting anymore at +1100. I would recommend that others do not as well. So Patrick Cantlay then becomes my play at +3500. And then matchups we touched on. I like Victor Hovland over Jordan Spieth at -105. And I like Daniel Berger. Excuse me, sorry. Who was that? Ah, dang it. Talked about it earlier. Don't have it right now. So
wait, I'll pull it up. Daniel Berger, you're saying the head-to-head matchup, right?
Yeah.
It was Colin Marikawa, right? You like Marikawa?
Yeah.
-115?
Daniel Berger over Marikawa, -115. Yep, you're correct. Thank you.
No, I'm sorry. And you Marikawa over Daniel Berger?
No, Berger over Marikawa.
Okay, you're taking the underdog. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so. Yeah, two matchups, two outrights there. I mentioned long shots earlier, so bet those as you like. And yeah, favorite bet, Lightning +750.
Yeah, thanks for listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Again, be sure to check out sportsbookwire.usatoday.com for all of our written posts and handicaps on these sporting events and any other major sporting event that's out there. You know, our excellent team is handicapping all the events that are trying to make the sports betting market sharper. Wish you luck this weekend in these dangerous sports betting waters, but thanks for streaming the Bet Slippin' Podcast. For Esten and I, we out.
You've been listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast with Jeff Clark and Esten McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire. Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.